a loved one looking for a long-term care opportunity that ensures dignified, fulfilling living in a safe environment staffed by caring and skilled professionals? Greenhouse Living for Sheridan is currently welcoming elders to the cottages located at 2311 Shirley Cove. Set up a visit to learn what sets Greenhouse Living for Sheridan apart, including private rooms, on-site activities, and a sense of community supported by the entire team at Sheridan Memorial Hospital. See SheridanGreenhouse.org today for additional information or to set up an appointment with our care team.
Looking to get rewarded just for spending? With our You Choose debit card's reward program, you can earn points every time you swipe. Redeem your points for cash back, gift cards, travel, and more. It's your money. It pays to spend smarter. Enroll today and make your debit card work as hard as you do. Visit Security State Bank today and start earning with You Choose Rewards at no cost to you. Security State Bank, small enough to listen, big enough to help. Member FDIC.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
It's Monday, August 18th, and from Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, I'm joined by Sheridan Memorial Hospital Dr. Allison Dawson and primary care nurse practitioner Laura Fisher. Good morning, and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now, before we get into your specialization, because that is something that we want to talk about at length so that listeners and the people of Sheridan understand just exactly what this is, let's go back in time and let's really look at what led you to this moment. Doc, I'll start with you. One thing I always like to ask doctors or anybody in the medical field is what first inspired you to do this? I mean, there's so much school involved. Mm-hmm. You really have to be dedicated to do this kind of work. Yeah. What was it for you?
So I think that when I think back and when I talk to people about why I'm in palliative care, I think back to my mom. So when I was 9, she was diagnosed with cancer. And within 6 months, she passed away. She suffered greatly throughout that 6 months. And when I was going to college and taking science classes and learning about, you know, maybe I wanted to be a vet, maybe I wanted to be a nurse, maybe I wanted to be a doctor, I thought, you know, what happened with my mom and was there something that could have been done? And so that's what really brought me to medicine was my mom. And the fact that she passed away and she suffered and maybe she didn't have to.
First, I'm very sorry about that. I lost my mom to cancer as well. It's a very tough time and rough to watch. What about you? What brought you here? Was there a moment in your life where you're like, that's it, that's what I want to do?
In high school, we had a program where we could go and experience different careers, and we got to visit a veterans home. And while we were visiting, I just noticed the real need and the vulnerable population there and how some of them were treated in front of me. And I thought, this is a place where I could make a difference and where I feel very passionate about intervening. And at that point, I didn't know if it was medically or personally or if I wanted to be a social worker. I just knew I wanted to be in that, you know, that position somewhere. Yeah. So that's where it kind of started.
You wanted to be in that environment to help people in that situation.
After I saw the need there.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, we're lucky to have people like you out in the world that see that and say, you know what, I think I can do better. This can be improved upon. Mm-hmm. Now, were there any particular mentors for you, Doc, as you were kind of, I mean, we all kind of have that one individual that inspires us, or heck, even when I was in the service, there was somebody that I latched onto. He's a great soldier, you know, someone I could try and emulate. Mm-hmm. What about you?
Yes, and hopefully he's okay with me saying his name, but Dr. Bartholomew, I actually shadowed him out of Saratoga before medical school, and he is the real reason why I stuck with my plan to apply to medical school and go in that direction. He is a family practice doctor, and he is everything that that community needed and more. And I was like, I need to be this level of support for a group of people. And he was inspiring, did everything for everybody. So he really sort of kept me going when medicine got really hard. I thought about him and what he did for the small community in Wyoming. And I was thinking, maybe I could do that one day. Maybe there's someplace out there where they need me and I could be there for them.
Man, it's just powerful. One doctor could have such an impact on so many people in these small rural communities throughout the state. You know, sometimes you got big teams that really make an impact together. But every once in a while, you come across that one individual who brought you into the world, you know, and has basically kind of been your family doctor all the way through it. That is such a traditional look at medical care. And one that I think, you know, Sheridan Memorial has really been working to try and return to. Mm-hmm. Having that one individual, boy, I trust them. If they say this is what you got to do, then I'm going to do what she says. This, she's got my best interests in mind. What about you?
My mentor would be Charge Nurse Joan back in Michigan. She was my charge nurse when I worked on the floor as a bedside nurse, and she was going to nurse practitioner school while I was a bedside nurse. And she told me about all the opportunities and the basically the job description of what a nurse practitioner can do. And I just wanted to be like her. And I wanted to be able to have that nursing heart with the medical knowledge and to be able to apply more diagnostic interventions with the nursing model. So I followed her, and now she's a geriatric nurse practitioner too in Michigan. And I'm here, and we're in close contact still.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah. Yeah.
You still contact Dr. Bartholomew?
I haven't seen him in a while, but I should reach out to him now that I'm back and let him know, you know, what he imparted in me with medicine.
You know, sometimes we don't even know that we're making the type of impact on somebody until that letter or email comes along. And then you kind of feel like, wow, it's not just validation. It's kind of the passing of the torch. You know, and that feels good. So, you know what's great, and no offense against any doctor anywhere, but I've had doctors come in and basically kind of break something down for me, but I don't know the jargon. So I look to the nurse, and the nurse is my translator, right? She's like, okay, Floyd, calm down. You're not going to lose your toe or whatever. This is just what they're saying. And I really appreciate nurses everywhere because they're very much the caregivers. You know, where I see my doctors is those are my problem solvers. We're going to get to the root of this problem. We're going to figure this out. And my nurse translates for me and make sure that the anxiety stays at a reasonable level. Now, if we look at internal medicine, I've spoke with other doctors from Sheridan Memorial Hospital about what this is really specific about, but I would like to hear you say internal medicine. What is internal medicine?
So internal medicine is the specialty where we specialize in all adult illnesses. So from 18 on up, anybody with any diagnosis, we take care of them. I like to think that we specialize in diagnosing. You know, family practice doctors know the most, you know, they have the broadest amount of knowledge. But with internal medicine, because we don't specialize in pediatrics or OBGYN, you know, care, our knowledge is a little bit deeper for adults. Mm-hmm. So because we didn't have all of that extra, I think that where we're needed is with diagnosing things. So if there's a question of what is going on, you know, our job is to ask all of the questions and get to the answer, order the right tests, that kind of thing. So that's how I see us in comparison.
Like a real specialized individual.
Yes. Here in Sheridan, I feel like all the internal medicine doctors also work as primary care doctors. So you need to come see us because your ear hurts or you don't feel good or you need your annual check. Absolutely. everyone here is great at that. But if there's also a question of what is going on, I don't know what's going on, but something is happening, then I like to think that we can help with that and get down to the actual answer.
Now, when it comes to kind of primary care nursing, but you chose really to go deeper into the senior population, right? Mm-hmm.
Geriatrics.
Now, when you look at geriatrics and you're going to school for that, how specific are your other lessons around that? Or do you have to hit a certain level as a nurse in your education? So they're like, okay, now you're an RN. Now we can specialize. Or do I get going in geriatrics pretty early on?
I chose a specific program special, like already designated to adult gerontology. So when I decided to go back to NP school, I chose between family practice and adult gerontology. So really that's just looking at the age, and it was 18 to end of life was adult gerontology, which is the path that I chose.
How tough was that?
It was tough. And, you know, you're at that point, you're most of those programs, you're still working. So I was working as a bedside nurse while in school, while doing clinicals. So, heavy workload with heavy learning material.
Yeah.
So
I mean, holy cow.
It was rough, but worth it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you ladies have dedicated your lives to something that is very tough, even to talk about. And imagine you sitting there after sometimes a 12-hour workday, and you've got lessons to go over for the rest of your evening, if you even truly want to call it an evening. It's just amazing to think that there's that dedication out there. You know, when I was in communications, it certainly wasn't this tough. I think I spent just as much time bellied up to a bar as anything else. Now, when we look at the careers, you've gone through the education, you've got that drive, you've made it there. What led you here?
Here to Sheridan.
Yeah.
So my husband and I are originally from Cheyenne. For the longest time, we've been together for 20-some years. We didn't think we wanted to have kids, and when we made that decision that we wanted to have kids, we knew we would be back in Wyoming for sure. You know, we were always wondering if we would end up back here because we missed it so much. You know, living in Seattle, then Chicago, then Dallas. When you come back to Wyoming, you really appreciate what it's like.
Gets in your blood, doesn't it?
It really does.
Gets in your blood.
It really does. So especially when we had kids, we knew we wanted to come back here, and that's where we were looking for what's the best place in Wyoming. Also for me, because of my palliative care training, I really wanted to be able to sort of break into that no matter where I was. And Sheridan and Mike McCafferty and all of the team here were really the only place in Wyoming that was supportive of my palliative care subspecialty.
Wow.
So they were willing to let me follow my dreams, and they're helping me today to do that. So it was an easy choice for me.
You know, I've gotten to know those individuals that you named fairly well over the last couple of years. We went through COVID together. That was like a war. But Sheridan Memorial Hospital has always been pretty progressive, you know, kind of on the edge of technology in certain aspects with their introduction of robotics and surgery and things like that. And it's a little Sheridan, Wyoming, for Pete's sake. We're not in some big city, and yet they've got this mindset where it's like, we're going to offer the best care. We're going to have the best of the best here. And so this progressive chain of thinking has led us to this palliative care, which we're going to discuss here in a little bit, just exactly what this is, because it is fairly new. And so I think some explanation definitely comes with that. Now, ma'am, when you finished up with your nursing school, I mean, you were Michigan, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does someone get from Michigan to Sheridan, Wyoming?
My husband and I visited out here a couple of times starting in 2019.
Uh-oh, did you get bit? Did you get bit by the bug?
We did. And he kind of said that's something he always wanted to do. I'm super family-oriented from a small farming community in Alto, Michigan. And was like, yeah, we can go visit there. We'll go every year, whatever. And then as we started coming back, we used to visit Buffalo. Then we came to Sheridan. And I decided, yeah, this is a thing that we have to try. So we made the move last September.
Oh, wow. So You're kind of a new kid in town.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you think so far?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Everything that you wanted it to be.
Everything and more. Yeah. Yes.
You guys got an opportunity to go up into the mountains a little bit, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We go up there frequently. We make a point to go almost weekly.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah.
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 Me seeing her photos and pictures online inspires us to go for sure.
See, that's, I always think to myself, boy, we got to get up to that mountain more. And we never get around to it. I'm just a kind of a lazy bones myself. My wife drags me out. And there's this thought where you're like, you know what? I don't want to do that today, but I'm going to go for her. And then you get up there and you're like, I hate it when she's so right all the time. This is really what I needed. Now, if we look at, smaller hospital, smaller population, what have you learned from working with patients and families in a smaller, more rural, I mixed some words there if you didn't notice, and more rural community compared to these larger health systems. Mm-hmm. I kind of started toting a horn a little bit about the progressiveness down there. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there really is something to it.
Yeah. I think that, and this is something that you see online and what people talk about, what doctors talk about, is that small communities, farmers, ranchers, people who live in rural places are much tougher. They deal with a lot of stuff on their own, and they have the ability to go through so many things before they even have access to a doctor. It is, I see people who drive 70 miles to come see me, and any doctor, and just the dedication they have to their health, but they have had to take care of themselves for a very long time without any help at all. And I think there's also, just because we don't have a lot of people, we don't have a lot of the same supports, as Chicago and Seattle. So, especially with the doctors here, we're doing a lot of things that we weren't, in training, we weren't told, you're also going to have to do X, Y, and Z and help people get fed and help people get, everything that they need.
One job becomes five.
Right? Yes. Yeah. And that's definitely something that's been, I wasn't prepared for it, but it gives me a huge respect for all of the doctors here and anywhere in rural America. Doctors are doing hard things in rural places. And so I'm just thankful for them and glad to be a part of it.
I spoke with one of our newer doctors not very long ago, and one thing that he really pointed out was every doctor he's talked to up at Sheridan Memorial came here because they wanted to be here. It wasn't, oh, I needed a job, I'm looking for the first opportunity. No, they had their sights set on Sheridan Memorial. And, it might just be a statement, but boy, that really means something. This to them is where you want it to be, to do the work that you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You're not looking for a hole in the fence. You are in the pasture you want to be in. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to Michigan, you said that you were in a small rural community, Mrs. Fisher. So now, is this kind of just like from one pot to a bigger pot, or how would that transition go?
It actually is quite opposite. I grew up in a really small town in Michigan, but worked in near Grand Rapids, which is very advanced medically and lots of resources, lots of support. So this is much different than where I was used to actually practicing. But the type of people and the community is very similar to where I grew up in my just my personality. I will say that here I notice a lot that's a lot different in a positive way from Grand Rapids, is that before I was just somebody that popped in and out of their door every day, even in long-term care, didn't have that personalization, that rapport. Mm-hmm. And here yesterday we were at the park in Sheridan and I ran into one of my patients and her daughters, and we both recognize each other. We know each other by name. And I think that helps so much with providing good medical care, is that we have that trusting relationship where they know they can tell me anything. They can tell me how they're really feeling, especially in long-term care when life isn't quite what we thought it would be at that point. Yeah. And a lot of vulnerability there. And it just helps to have that nice, close interpersonal relationship with our folks here.
There's a key word that we're going to talk about. I got to take a break, but hope is a very powerful word. And sometimes when that's taken away from you, it takes somebody really special to try and rekindle that for you. And we're going to have a conversation about that in just a moment. More with Sheridan Memorial Hospital Palliative Care in just a moment. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
You're on the go, and so should your banking.
At First Federal Bank and Trust, you can open personal checking and savings accounts anytime, online or on the First Federal app.
It's banking on your time wherever you are.
Plus, we're celebrating 90 years of community commitment, proudly serving Sheridan and the people who make it great.
Banking made easy with the community at heart.
Visit efirstfederal.bank to get started today. First Federal Bank and Trust, 90 years strong, member FDIC.
This is the story of Jack and the Beanstalk, which Jack climbed all the way to a giant's castle. But Jack had whooping cough, which he gave to the giant. The giant coughed so hard it blew Jack right out the window. The end. Without vaccines, our stories wouldn't be the same. Thank a vaccine. Are your kids up to date? Learn more at immunizewyoming.com.
Whether you're planting a tree or digging a foundation, contact One Call of Wyoming at 1-800-849-2476 or 811. Call 2 business days before you dig. It's free and required by law. Repairs to utilities can be expensive. Cutting a gas line or electrical line can be deadly. No matter if it's weekend yard work or major construction, call One Call of Wyoming at 1-800-849-2476 or 811. Sponsored by Public Service Commission, Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
If you haven't signed up for the Sheridan Media Newsletter, well, now's the time. You'll find some of the top news stories of the week, community events, local sports, weather, as well as the latest movies from Centennial Theater, what's happening at the Wyo Theater, discover fun facts, local photos and videos, Sheridan history, country bounty links, as well as links to some of your favorite businesses and promotions. It's emailed every Thursday morning. If you don't get the newsletter, you're missing out. Click on the Sheridan Media Newsletter button that's on the front of our website at SheridanMedia.com.
This public service message is presented by BHJ Property Management at 101 South Main.
If you smell the aroma of freshly baked pie in the air, it's coming from Story, where the Story Women's Club is preparing for our annual Story Days fundraiser, August 22nd and 23rd. Friday, starting at 4, we have our famous homemade pies and ice cream. Saturday at 11, we have chicken and hot dogs with all the fixings for lunch, plus more pie. Join the Story Days fun and be sure to stop by the Story Women's Club.
Good morning. Welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning, we're speaking with Sheridan Memorial Hospital Dr. Allison Dawson and primary care nurse practitioner Laura Fisher. A lot of people confuse palliative care with hospice. And Doc, this was something that you said before we kicked the mics on. You really wanted folks to understand the difference because it is fairly new. Mm-hmm. This is a new concept. Especially around here. So when we break it down, go ahead and let me know. What is the difference between the two?
So I will start by giving my definition of what palliative care is. So it is a subspecialty service to help people with major medical illnesses with their symptoms and with goals of care. So what does that actually mean? It's if anybody has a major medical diagnosis, and the easiest one that we can think of that is correlative is cancer. So if you are diagnosed with cancer, you would automatically see a palliative care doctor. And my goal as a palliative care doctor is to improve your quality of life in any way that I can. This is a very hard thing to go through, a diagnosis of cancer. Or, for example, end-stage kidney disease, end-stage heart failure, end-stage lung disease. So any disease that has the potential to limit life in some way. That's a very hard diagnosis to get, and it's a very hard diagnosis to live with. And my job is to be an extra layer of support to the people who are treating you in any way that I can. So one of the things that I ask in every visit is what brings you joy? What brings you meaning every day? And my goal is to keep that in your life as long as possible. My other goal is to make sure that you know what you're getting from all of your care. So it can be confusing with all the different chemotherapies, heart failure drugs, radiation types out there. What does that all mean? And do I have to do that? And so my job is to bring all of your options and lay them out in a way where we can talk about the positives, the negatives, the differences, and then all of your choices so that when you leave, you can say, okay, I made the right choice. I'm going in the right direction. So the way that I think about it is palliative care is to improve your life and to make sure that you're getting the care that you want.
When I think about putting myself in that position, I can't even imagine the fear, the loss of hope, the things that really affect someone emotionally, things that we need to get by. I mean, this is a very difficult job. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with it emotionally?
So I think that all of us who go into healthcare, especially having gone through COVID, we can deal with hard things. We have developed ways of getting through hard stuff. For me, I am willing to go through any hard thing if the person at the end of the day has a better life. So if there is one thing that I can do after this very hard visit that puts a smile on someone's face or makes their life better in any way, then I've done my job. Then all of that is worth it. I am willing to do the hard things to get someone's life better. So when there is an opportunity, when I can really take away someone's suffering, that's it for me. Then I know all of this has been worth it. The 15 years of schooling, all of the tests, all of the hardships and things that we've gone through as providers and physicians, it's all been worth it if I can do something for somebody that improves their life in some way.
And in some ways, rekindle that hope.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just so critical to individuals who are battling something mm-hmm. like this. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, studies have been done. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, hey, your outlook affects this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And so having somebody on your side to try and ease any suffering, ease any pain,
mm-hmm.
just adds to that. Beyond treating illness, what other needs, emotional, spiritual, practical,
mm-hmm.
does palliative care really address? I mean, as a doctor, I'm mm-hmm. looking at you, mm-hmm. you know the science, you know the yeah. health behind everything.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to these other things, the emotional and the spirit,
mm-hmm.
where do you step in?
So we have all those conversations. That is part of my entire plan with every person. My number one priority when I see a new patient is if they are suffering physically, I try and help with that immediately. So let's get you out of pain. Let's get you out of suffering. I'm going to do that right now. And then we're going to talk about goals of care. So when you talk about hope, what does hope mean to you? Does hope mean that I'm going to live a certain amount of time? Does hope mean that I'm going to make it to my granddaughter's graduation? Does hope mean that I will not suffer until my time of passing? We define that for each person individually. So what does that mean to you? And can I get that to you for as long as possible? Then it's exactly like you said about the spiritual, you know, who do you get your support from? Are you a spiritual person? Do you go to church? Where are your supports in the community? Are they from your friends, your family? Did you move here and you don't have anybody? What is home like? Can you do things at home? How can I help you at home? How are meals? Can I get you some food? Can I get you people to come in and help in any way? You know, every single aspect. We then talk about what does this diagnosis mean to you and what does dying mean to you? Where do you see yourself in a couple of years? Where do you see this diagnosis taking you? And how can we make that an easier thought process, but an easier path in any way? So there's a whole lot of things that we talk about in palliative care, but I like to think of any human need, I would like to address that if I can and make sure that you're getting everything that we have to offer. If I cannot help with that, I have a great support staff and people who can help me get that for the person. You know, my job is just to make your life better if I can.
When it comes to chronic pain, I think I'm that pain in the butt who's going to look at you and say, "Doc, I don't want to live in a haze. Mm-hmm. I need alternatives to drugs." Mm-hmm. I've just never been one of those guys who enjoyed that, you know. So mm-hmm. how do we do that? I mean, do you reach out into other fields where you're like, okay, so let's look at holistic. Is that how you pronounce that? Holistic.
Yeah.
Let's mm-hmm. look at holistic mm-hmm. options mm-hmm. if you don't want to go for drugs.
Yeah.
Let's look at other alternatives mm-hmm. that could possibly be better. Mm-hmm. Do you recommend these things? Do you mm-hmm. talk about these things with your patients? If not, would you like it if they did? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want someone just being like, well, I ran off and started growing mm-hmm. some mint because it mm-hmm. said that it was going to do this for me. Mm-hmm. Where's the science behind that?
Right. So in my practice, with my training, in a perfect world, I would be able to treat you with medications that are meant for your diagnosis and you wouldn't be in a haze. So the way that I like to practice is very intricately. So I'm going to do everything I can with the tools that I have at my exposure to treat your pain without you being in a haze. So there is a way to do that for the most part. There's been a couple instances where someone's pain has been so great that they've felt that way. When we treat their pain, they also feel hazy or tired all the time. And there are things that we can do to offset that. But for the most part, if I'm treating your pain well, then I should be able to get you out of suffering, but not put you in a haze. But there are those situations where maybe I can't do that, or maybe you're interested in more holistic options, and I am here for it. You know, there has been, you know, research into psilocybin, into marijuana. There's been a lot of research out there, and I can speak to the research. If you come to me and say that I want to do X, Y, or Z, and I haven't heard of that before, I will do the research. Let me look into this. My goal is to make sure that what you're doing isn't harming you or the care that you want to receive. Mm. I think that that's where in this community and in different parts of rural America, we have seen there be a little bit of difficulty where someone is trying to treat their suffering and it may be harming their care, if that makes sense. So,
absolutely,
you know, my neighbor told me to take this pill and, well, actually I'm having liver failure. And is it from this pill or is it from my cancer treatment? And we don't know if we don't know that you're taking it. So 100% every doctor would say, if you're taking something that we didn't recommend or that we wouldn't recommend, we still want to know about it. Because if we can mitigate the negative side effects, then I will do that. If it is important to you to take this medication, if there's a way that I can make it more safe or I can monitor things and be able to keep you on it, that's what I'm going to do. I try not to be judgmental. Everyone has different values. And if it's important to them to not use medications that we typically use, I will do everything I can to get that for them in a way that I know the side effects and the way to do it as safe as possible.
We all know it's not just the individual, but also the families. How does palliative care change the experience for those families that are kind of standing off? I mean, they're not on the sidelines, right? They're heavily involved, mm-hmm. wanting to do everything that they can. Their support system. Mm-hmm. How have you seen this new care affect those individuals?
Well, I like to think that they know they're no longer alone. You know, they have someone else whose entire job is to improve life, to make life easier, that they're not the only one doing the hard work at home. We also have, I have visits just for family members as well. You know, it is a very hard thing for a person with a diagnosis to go through, but it is also a very hard thing for the family members to go through. So I bring in families, we have family meetings, I have visits with, you know, family members as well. And we talk about how hard it is and the hardships and ways that we can support them. So I like to think that, you know, when I meet with family members or have family meetings, they know that they're not alone, that it, they have someone that they can say, what do I do in this situation? And I'm here for all of those questions or concerns.
I know you're not a psychologist, but you're the shoulder I'm going to cry on because I don't want to cry in front of them. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to be strong for them. Mm-hmm. But I need someone I can look at who understands, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm going to pour my heart out mm-hmm. to you. Mm-hmm. And then when I go home to my sick loved one, I'm going to be their strength. Mm-hmm. And I imagine you've faced that before.
Mm-hmm. We have.
Because that's how I would address it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be strong for them. Mm-hmm. But you're going to see a sponge mm-hmm. when I walk through that door.
Yeah. And I think, you know, every person is different. Someone may say, I'm going to be a rock. I'm not going to show any emotion. I am going to be the person that that, you know, person, my family member, my loved one can lean on. And other people may respond differently to major medical diagnoses. So my job is to figure out, you know, what is this dynamic like and how can I support it? And what does this person need that maybe they're not able to provide for their family member or loved one? Can I get that to them in some other way? Mm-hmm. But really my job is just to support every person in the support system as much as possible. But yeah, we do have very intense conversations right off the bat. So I have very immediate relationships with people because you're normally not talking about this level of, you know, conversation or topic with anyone else. And so we're getting into it right away, and it's heavy and it's fast. But I think it makes a big difference. And we have research out there that shows that if you integrate palliative care early, people have longer lives and improve their quality of life.
And I'm glad that you've addressed the fact that the minute I walk in that office, my loved one has got a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go through all five stages. I'm probably going to be angry. I'm going to be angry at the world. I'm going to be angry. And then I'm going to be really miserable. Mm-hmm. And my call to action is going to be information. Mm-hmm. At least, and I'm only speaking from how I think I would mm-hmm. handle it. Mm-hmm. How I have handled situations in the past that are similar to something like this. Mm-hmm. I want information. And I feel, you know, I was the kid who bought the whole knowledge is power thing. So that knowledge empowers me, and it gives me comfort. So the more I know, the easier it comes, mm-hmm. these situations come to handle, mm-hmm. be handled. Mm-hmm. But it's good to know that you're there. Excuse me. Now, if there was one thing that you really want the community to understand better about palliative care, mm-hmm. and I've gone back and forth with my pronunciation of this word.
It's all the same.
Really trying yeah. to work for
yeah.
it here.
Yeah.
What would that be? What would, if you were to just stand everybody up right now and say, mm-hmm. look, if there was one thing I could tell you guys, it's this.
And I think it's that question you asked me earlier about what the difference is between palliative care and hospice. Because I think the, you know, misconception out there, which is not necessarily a misconception, it's just that no one knows about palliative care. So the main differences being that if your physician, if your provider is recommending palliative care, that in no way means that they're giving up. You know, they just want an extra person to support you.
I want a bigger team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is more people out here than just me, you know. If you need something and I can't help you, there is other people to talk to. So the big difference in hospice and palliative care is that palliative care is appropriate at the time of diagnosis. So, you know, the American oncology guidelines talk about within 8 weeks of a diagnosis of cancer, you should consider meeting with a palliative care doctor. And that's, you know, similar for every major medical diagnosis. You should at least consider it and just know that there's another person out there that's going to help you on top of your doctor or your subspecialist who's been helping you. It's not just them. There's extra people supporting them and the patient. The big difference is time frame. So palliative care at the time of diagnosis, hospice is appropriate at what we think to be the last 6 months of life. So we have the same goals. So hospice is also there to improve your quality of life, to relieve suffering. It's a group effort. You know, they work with a huge group of people to provide a lot of services. Palliative care is the same. So we are trying to improve quality of life, reduce suffering, and work in a group scenario. The difference is the timing. So palliative care is appropriate for the whole time you're going through this very hard situation. And hospice is appropriate when we're no longer receiving curative treatments and we believe that there might be about 6 months left to life. And that's the difference between the two. So I think there is some fear around seeing me in clinic because there is that confusion between hospice and palliative care. And I think that some providers don't want their patients to believe that they're giving up on them by sending them to me. So my job right now is just to educate and talk about when is palliative care appropriate and what is it and how can I help you? And that's all I'm trying to do now is get that message out that you don't have to suffer alone to the patient and also to the provider. You know, I'm here to help you. That's all.
The bigger the team, the better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're specialized in something that people are just starting to try to learn about and get used to. And it's very strange because as I'm sitting here talking to you, that seems like a pretty vital spot. And it's odd to me that this is something that is fairly new. But on that, I got to take a quick commercial break. More, we're Sheridan Memorial Hospital, palliative care. We're going to talk about the greenhouse when we come back. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
Since 1935, First Federal Bank and Trust has been a cornerstone of Sheridan.
And to celebrate 90 years of community commitment, we're donating $90,000 to 10 nonprofit organizations in Sheridan. Each month through November, we'll honor our legacy of community support by investing in a local nonprofit.
This month, First Federal will award $9,000 to Volunteers of America.
90 years, $90,000. Community commitment at its finest. Visit eFirstFederal.bank, member FDIC.
Dude, Rootstock is coming to Landon's Greenhouse.
Rootstock? What's that?
Rooted in Wyoming's annual fundraiser. $30 gets you amazing local food from Ola's Market, local beer, and live music from Dave Munsick. Plus, donations are matched by the Standish Family Fund.
Rooted in Wyoming taught my kids soils and worms.
Yeah, so bring your friends and family and items for the food drive. Help connect the community through local food.
Rootstock, Saturday, September 6th, 12 to 3 at Landon's Greenhouse. Get tickets at rootedinwyoming.org.
It's almost time for the kids to go back to school. And you want to make sure they get there, right? Well, take the car to Midas for a back-to-school checkup. Midas checks fluids, belts, tires, brakes, battery, coolants, and more. And if you need tires, save up to $140 on Cooper tires. Transportation is a very important part of actually getting them back to school. Midas Tire and Auto in Sheridan, home of the lifetime warranty on brakes, shocks, struts, mufflers, and now tires.
Bon Voyage. Reserve your spot to sail away. Join Judy Fuller and Latitudes Travel for an unforgettable 8-day Viking River cruise to Paris and Normandy, April 29th. Dock in the heart of Paris. See the Eiffel Tower from your ship. Walk the historic Normandy beaches and wander Monet's stunning gardens. Celebrate France's history, art, and cuisine all in one trip. Hold your cabin now for just $25 per person. Packages start at $3,499. Call Julie or Rick at Latitudes Travel of Wyoming, 674-0656. 674-0656.
Looking for an investment with staying power? Synergy Shoppa Miniums in Sheridan is the smart choice for stable, long-term returns. Own your own commercial space, lease it, grow a business, or resell for profit. With high demand and limited availability, These Shopominiums are smart money. Built to last, designed to earn. Don't miss your chance to own real property with real potential. Contact Sheridan Realty Associates and ask about Synergy Shopominiums and invest smart.
It's the dog days of summer, and your pup is living their best life. From belly flops in the creek to chilling in the shade, our four-legged friends know how to savor the season. Enter a photo of your dog living their best summer life on our Dog Days of Summer photo contest, online now at SheridanMedia.com. Presented by All Around Canine, Country Pet Inn, and Mandy Koltiska with Century 21 BHJ Realty. The winner by most votes will get $500 in chamber bucks and a gift certificate to Country Pet Inn. Enter on the contest page at SheridanMedia.com.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse, proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning I'm speaking with Sheridan Memorial Hospital Dr. Allison Dawson and primary care nurse practitioner Laura Fisher. Now, for those listeners who have not heard of this, and again, you said this was fairly new, tell me what the greenhouse model is.
So it's a different type of long-term care. It's described as a movement. So there's lots of different greenhouse facilities across the country, but it is a different model than usual. So we have these small cottages. So we have four cottages here with about a dozen elders living in each one. And we have a limited number of folks providing care, but they're providing more comprehensive care, if that makes sense. So instead of having an MA, a CNA, an RN, you know, a house cleaner, a cook, there are RNs and CNAs who are providing all of that. So the person who is cooking your meal is also the one helping you with medications and taking care of you on a day-to-day basis. So you really get a more personalized relationship with the person who you're going to see all of the time. You're not also going to be like, who is that person down there? You're going to know everybody in the room. And it really aligns well with palliative care. So it's a different, you know, we're really focusing on how can we make your life better. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the ways we're eliminating the quantity of people that elders have to deal with and making those relationships stronger.
Laura, you've had probably pretty good relationships with seniors as you take care of them. I mean, having that personability with an individual, pretty key at that point, especially if something like dementia is involved. Mm-hmm. This greenhouse model, in your experience, is this a better way to approach senior care?
Yeah, I think part of the greenhouse model too, or that really speaks to, is that the elders themselves are also participating in their cares more. So they're encouraged to help. You know, if they can still vacuum, they can vacuum. If they want to help cook or clean, they're still doing those things.
I can retain some of my independence.
Yes, yes, and their dignity, and not feeling like long-term care is, I'm just going to lay here in this bed until my last day.
Nobody wants to feel like they're a burden. Nobody.
Right, and I think that model really helps not only the elder as they're adjusting to life in long-term care, but it helps me as a provider because I can observe how they're, so say dementia, say somebody has new dementia, I can see how it's affecting their activities of daily living as I watch them try to still maintain care for themselves. And as we're kind of losing those bits of independence, that helps me to assess exactly where they're at in their disease process, which helps me to know how best to care for them and what therapies and medications and stuff we can offer at that point.
I mean, getting at this level of personability with individuals. I mean, I really like that idea. And then making the living quarters kind of smaller cottages, mm-hmm. small communities in a way. So what is your daily routine like? Are you out kind of just popping in and saying hi or?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Yep. I visit each of the cottages. I just pick one. It's different every day to keep the, you know.
Gotta stay random.
Yeah. So I just start in a cottage. I go in, I start with the staff there and ask them, you know, what's going on, who's been having troubles today, who needs me. And then I also will be following up on people. So there's certain people that I'm following myself that I know I need to stop in and check in on. But the nice thing is as I'm walking through, I can kind of, I'm always observing, always looking, always seeing what's going on in the cottage. So I can tell if somebody's struggling or has a behavior or, you know, if somebody's not eating, I can be watching those things as I'm doing my rounds and walking through. It really helps to know. And it helps them too, because they see me regularly and they know Laura's here today. I can stop in and ask her a question. They know that we're available. They like the days that Dr. Dawson visits too. She's a hot commodity around there.
You know, I see you popping. I'm going to have to hide the cookies farther underneath the bed. That's the type of person I'm going to end up being. Now, if there was one thing that you would like people to understand about the greenhouse model or what you do in a day, I've got about a minute left. Would you tell me what that is?
I think I just want people to know that there's so much fear based around, you know, that stage of your life when we need to either yourself go into long-term care or, you know, we need to put mom in a home, I think is the often phrase that we...
It's heartbreaking to think about, yeah.
I've worked in a lot of places and I've seen a lot of long-term care settings, and I think that that greenhouse model where we're maintaining independence as long as we can, in a place that's very supportive, a very community environment, the elders all care for each other too, and it's just a wonderful place to be, to grow older and to kind of adjust to that last chapter of our lives.
That retention of independence, I think, is so important. Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, it's a founding pinnacle of the cowboy state itself.
Yes.
I like to be independent. And I know a lot of people do too, but I do realize that we all reach that point in life where sometimes I can't do that anymore. And that's heartbreaking. You know, but I do know this, that we are very lucky as a community to have individuals like you who are stepping up and able to make that blow a lot less impactful. And even when it is super impactful, I got a soft spot to land. So thank you for everything that you guys do every single day. It's greatly appreciated. And I hope that folks have a better understanding of just what that is. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
You're on the go, and so should your banking.
At First Federal Bank and Trust, you can open personal checking and savings accounts anytime, online or on the First Federal app.
It's banking on your time wherever you are.
Plus, we're celebrating 90 years of community commitment, proudly serving Sheridan and the people who make it great.
Banking made easy with the community at heart.
Visit efirstfederal.bank to get started today. First Federal Bank and Trust, 90 years strong, member FDIC.
The Sheridan Farmers Market is back for another great season at Whitney Commons Park. You'll find local produce, meat, eggs, coffee, baked goods, and outstanding locally handcrafted items this Thursday and every Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. through September 18th. See the best our hardworking local producers have to offer at the Sheridan Farmers Market, Thursday evenings in Whitney Commons Park. Sponsored in part by Sheridan Media. And remember, please leave your pets at home.
Hi, this is Liz Kincaid, host of the video podcast called Sheridan County Ag Update. Join me each week as I visit with local folks about ag issues, rodeo, 4-H, FFA, and much more. Sheridan County Ag Update presented by Heartland Kubota and True Built Builders. You can find my video podcast each week and other interviews under the podcast tab on SheridanMedia.com. So join me, Liz Kincaid, host of Sheridan County Ag Update on SheridanMedia.com.